Bernardo Circus. Short description: James Calderwood, Gunter Coleman scratched hard at the left side of his face, with his little finger where his eye and ear had been blown off. It had happened when a Polish soldier had thrown a hand grenade, which exploded while on the way to the village of Kostrzyn near the Polish and German border. Two of his men were killed by the grenade. A piece of red-hot shrapnel from the grenade had torn through his face and had sheared off the three middle fingers of his left hand, leaving him with only the little finger and thumb. That had happened 3 years ago at the beginning of World War II. The itch of the missing eye and ear almost drove him insane even after all these years of fighting. Now he was hiding in the forest with a small band of SS troops and young Hitler Youth boys, waiting for the gypsy caravans to arrive. This was a cat-and-mouse play, a deadly game of hide-and-seek. Gunter Coleman studied his aerial maps of the forest. The gypsies' horses had been spotted from the air by a small reconnaissance aircraft 2 days before. He tapped his finger on the map, showing a location, then put his hand down on the table and addressed his troops. "Here is where the gypsies should be arriving in the morning." He winced. He then scratched at the mutilated ear once more. He looked across the table. "What do you think, Wolfgang?" the rugged-looking officer grunted. He then nodded in agreeance. "They would be looking for some green grass to feed the horses in the glade by the river. The distance is right for them to arrive in the morning at the speed they are traveling at," Wolfgang said with confidence. Wolfgang took a flask and two cups from his backpack. "Would you like some coffee, sir?" "Yes, thank you, Wolfgang." The burly man poured coffee into the two cups. Gunter took a sip from his hot coffee. "Thank you, this tastes good," he said as he drank the coffee. The forest was pinched into less than a kilometer wide in this place near the village of Slaski, being bordered by a small river on one side and farmland on the other. Scouts in the forest had reported the caravans traveling toward the small glade. He and his troops were waiting at this place in the forest. There would not be any sense attacking the gypsies in the forest, as many of them would have escaped in the trees and undergrowth then steal away. Poland was the first country to be beaten into submission by the German Hitler's Third Reich. The invasion had taken place on the 1st of September, 1939, when the German troops had stormed through the country. Many Polish officers in the armed services and officials from cities and towns were captured and then lined up against walls and shot. In the summer of 1942, a vicious scourge was taking place by the Nazis to rid the Polish countryside of Jews and gypsies. The Jews and gypsies were being systematically executed by Nazi SS soldiers of the Einsatzgruppen and acting under orders from Reinhard Heydrich, the hangman of Prague. Heydrich was the head of the German Reich security. He was noted for his brutal methods of subduing the population. Chapter 1. The line of gypsy caravans was moving slowly from the trees onto the edge of a secluded glade in the forest. Men and boys jumped down from the seats of caravans to guide them under cover as they stopped moving. The caravans were then carefully backed up to be among the trees on the edge of the green grassy area. The pre-morning calling of the forest birds was not the usual joy to hear by the people who were fleeing for their lives. The loud calling was a worry as it masked any other background noises from the forest. A canopy of tree branches partially hid them from above. There was a small river within 100 meters. The people and horses were desperately in need of water for washing and drinking. The water barrels on the wagons were almost empty. The horses also had to share the water. It had been some days since they had been near a river or stream. The caravans had been painted a drab color over the bright patterns which had adorned them before the war. Dark browns, greens, and grays formed a camouflage to help hide them in the forest. Fear showed on the faces of the caravan drivers. They checked from left to right in the dim pre-dawn light, straining their eyes, watching the shapes in the forest for any sign of movement. One of the gypsy men had used a dimmed lamp with a spluttering homemade candle in it. He was the navigator. He walked in the front of the caravans looking for logs, stones, and overhanging tree branches on and above the track they were taking. After walking for some time, a new person would take his place. A broken wagon wheel or axle would be a huge inconvenience in their flight from Poland. There was no music or laughter, as was usual when setting up a new campsite. The worried grim look on the people's shadowy faces as the early sunlight peeped through the trees, as the sun slowly rose over the horizon. The angled sunbeams shining through the trees threw off large shadows which, when the breeze blew the tree branches, made them look like a troop of shadowy living beings moving in the new dawn light. The people were extremely afraid. They had heard tales of the atrocities being carried out against their clansmen by the Nazi SS troops. The genocide was being carried out from the orders to exterminate the Jews and Gypsies, which had been given by Adolf Hitler to Reinhard Heydrich. They were the cause of the alarming situation that the people were living in. Marco Romanski half stood, then carefully looked around before he climbed down from the wooden seat of the caravan. He grasped rail on the edge of the hard wooden seat and then used the spokes of one of the front wheels as a ladder to reach the ground. Marco was a heavy-set strong man with the dark hair, dark skin, and the Romani features of a gypsy. His eldest son Ivan and daughter Sasha followed him down to the grassy ground. They then began to help him unhook the two horses from the caravan. He called into the caravan in a loud whisper for his youngest son Bernardo to help with the horses. The lad was not inside the caravan. He was missing. This was not unusual, for Bernardo was well known as a good forager for food. "Where is Bernardo?" Marco quietly asked Krista, his wife, as she collected the bowls and spoons for their meal. He had noticed a light dimly shining in the distance some way back. He was going to see if this were a farmhouse. He said the farmhouse may be a good place to search for some food, he said. "You know what he is like." I tried to stop him from going. Unhitching the horses from the caravans was difficult because all of the chains and hooks had string and strips of material woven through the holes to muffle the ringing noise of the chain as the horses pulled the wagon. The people then tethered the horses to some small trees, where the tired, sweaty horses started to graze on the green grass and tree leaves while waiting for the bucket of water from the nearby stream to drink. Other horses from caravans were also being tethered nearby. Men and children working with the horses were careful not to make any noise. Men and children then pulled small boughs from the trees and climbed to cover the roof of each caravan to camouflage them from any aircraft flying above. They talked in muffled tones as they worked. The other women were working taking the cooking utensils out of the caravans. A small fire was lit in a makeshift stove constructed from a small round drum with the top removed. This drum had holes pierced around the bottom to let the air to the fire. This was to minimize the usual amount of smoke from the normal cooking fire. The fire drum was used to cook with a deep pot which was hung into the top. The pot contained some meager fare of weeds, nettles, and one of the rabbits which had been snared after leaving the previous week's campsite deep in the forest. There was no bread or cheese. These luxuries had not been eaten for many months. When they were camping at the previous site some days before, a young lad had wandered into the camp from the thick forest. The two camp dogs noisily announced his arrival. Giorgio, who was from a different gypsy family, then walked to Marco begging for food. This poor lad was very thin from living in the forest alone and having to eat bugs and grass. He had to hide in the trees at night in case the wolves or wild boar was to catch him. His legs and arms were covered in scratches and sores, caused by him moving through the prickly shrubs and climbing trees. His clan had been friends with Marco and the 30 members of his Romanski clan. Giorgio explained his problem. "I had been out looking for food when I had heard the sounds of guns firing." He shuddered at the thought of what he was about to recall. "When I ran back to the camp, I stopped some distance away. I watched my family being murdered by a horrible SS commander and his evil men. I did not see the face of the man telling the men to kill, as he had his back to me. He had a mutilated hand with only two fingers. I saw this as he waved his hand to show the men were to attack." Giorgio started to sob. "When my parents and sisters and other people were all killed, I watched as some Polish prisoners tossed the bodies of my parents and relatives onto the tray of a large truck. The nasty man had walked away and was standing talking and laughing with his men. I still could not see his face. I was afraid of being caught and killed. I ran away." He greedily ate a mouthful of food and drank some water. "I was sleeping in a tree one night when a pack of wolves started to growl and then tried to jump up and climb to where I was trying to sleep, wedged in between where three branches came out from the tree trunk. One wolf could almost reach me. I was very afraid as I could not climb any higher into the tree as there were no branches to grab onto. They had finally left me. I was scared about getting down the next morning in case they were waiting for me, Marco talked to other members of the clan. A decision was made. Giorgio was taken into the clan by Marco and his family. Marco and his extended family of three brothers and his two younger sisters, and with their husbands, wives and children made up the clan. There were 6 caravans, 2 wagons, a goat and milk, and 15 horses. The family had heard rumors of the Nazi atrocities against the Gypsies and Jews some time ago. They were extremely worried that they may also be caught. Marco was plotting a course toward Hungary. He had heard from the few other Gypsy clans that they had met that this country had not yet been invaded by the Nazis. This involved traveling during the moonlit nights and keeping in the forests and sparsely populated areas so they were not seen. As they ate their meal, one of Marco's sisters, Asha, stopped eating. She had a long hooked nose with a thin face and a shock of unruly gray hair. She could pass for a witch with the right clothing. She then spoke to the clan in a soft voice, "I had a bad vision last night. I could see people with guns and young boys running from one person to another with knives and cutting them while laughing. I saw this man with 3 fingers missing from one hand and only having one eye and ear. This was an evil man." Asha was one of Marco's sisters who in better times had been a fortune teller at fairgrounds and other events they had frequented. This vision worried the people of the clan. They discussed this in whispers amongst themselves as they ate from their bowls. Bernardo was just 12 years old. He was walking through the forest toward where the dim light had been. He was navigating by the stars. His eyes had become accustomed to the gloom after the moon had set. The brilliant starlight from the sky helped him to see. He left the forest, then climbed through a wooden rail fence, then walked across a freshly plowed field toward the farm. He had run into a gorse bush and had some spines in his ankles. These would have to wait until morning when he returned to the camp. The farmhouse was carefully avoided as it would surely have a large dog sleeping outside. He could just make out the outline against the bright starry sky of what looked like a chicken coop some 40 meters from the house. He crept carefully toward it, trying to not make any sound. He made sure he kept downwind from the house and probable large dog. The horses and other animals in the barn nearby made contented noises as they slept. When he arrived at the coop, he could hear the rustling of feathers and the soft sleepy cluck of some of the chickens inside. Bernardo lifted the latch on the gate and then entered the wired coop. He went into the henhouse, then carefully opened the door. He quietly stepped inside, felt amongst the sleeping chickens as to not wake them. He slowly put his hand around the head of a chicken holding its beak closed. He then pulled it into the folds of his thick coat to stop it from making an alarm call or flapping its wings. A few of the chickens were disturbed somewhat, but they still clucked quietly. As he left the chicken house and was crossing the plowed field back toward the forest, he looked at the twinkling stars netted in by the tangle of tree branches. A shooting star drew a line of light across the sky just above the tree line before it vanished and died. Caravan tracks should be. He navigated by the starlight once more. The first rays of sunshine were now peeping over the horizon. This made finding his way through the forest far easier. After a short time, Bernardo found the tracks of the horses and wagons. He felt proud that he had caught some decent fare for the pot and food for the clan. He had been walking for almost an hour along the trail left by the horses' hooves and wagon wheels. Suddenly, in the near distance, the sound of gunfire broke out. Bernardo dropped the dead chicken and then headed toward the sounds of screaming and gunfire. He was running as hard as he could through the undergrowth in the forest. Marco's 2 large dogs were barking and the horses were screaming in pain. In the small clearing where the clan had stopped to make camp was a horrible scene. Nazi soldiers were shooting at his family. Flame spat from the muzzles of their guns as the bullets sped to his family. The soldiers had the family in a crossfire with soldiers firing from 2 sides of the camp. There was no avenue of escape. Young lads not much older than he, dressed in the khaki uniform of the Hitler Youth, were running and laughing as they slashed at the people with knives as they lay dying on the ground. The lads were covered in blood from the people they had stabbed. Mixed in with the noise of the screaming people and barking dogs was the shrill noise of wounded horses, as some had been shot in the crossfire by the Nazi soldiers. A single shot in resistance was fired from one of the caravans. This was from the ancient muzzle-loading rifle, which was used in some of their poaching forays. The rifle had been aimed at the Nazi commander. This man had swung around to shoot at another of Bernardo's relatives. The bullet had hit the man behind him in the shoulder. Machine gun fire was directed at the gypsy caravan from where the shot had been fired. Marco's brother pushed the rear door open. He then fell backward from the rear of the caravan, missing the steps. He still held the old gun in his hands. His body was torn to pieces by the concentrated machine gun fire. Ruffle, one of Marco's dogs, leaped onto one of the boys and bit hard onto his neck. One of the other lads ran to help the bleeding boy. He stabbed the dog through the chest. The dog opened his mouth and then fell to the ground, writhing in his death throes. The lad was bleeding profusely from his wound. The other lad, who had stabbed the dog, wound his neck scarf around the wounded lad to stop the bleeding. Marco's other dog had now been shot. The man then turned. He showed the left side of his face, which had an ear missing and a patch over his eye. Bernardo felt the evilness of this tall, thin man. A cold shiver ran down his spine. As he lay deep in the thick bush, he watched as one of the young blonde-haired boys in the Hitler Youth uniform cut his mother's throat. Blood gushed out of Krista's throat onto the green grass. She began shaking from the lack of blood as her lifeblood spilled out. Then Ivan and Sasha were stabbed and killed as they ran to their mother's aid. Bernardo almost fainted from the grief he held back in his heart. He had an urge to run to his mother's aid also, but knew better than to sacrifice himself. The lad was laughing and mocking the gypsies. The smell of fear and the smoke from the guns was taken from Bernardo's nose to his brain. He almost screamed in grief. Silent tears streamed down his face, wetting the collar of his vest. When the human carnage was ended, the soldiers then shot the horses and goat. There was a noise of some heavy vehicle crashing through the undergrowth toward where he was hiding. A large truck with wooden sides on the tray was driven past where Bernardo was, nearly running down the thick bush he was hiding in as it crashed past him through the short shrubbery. The truck stopped in the clearing near the bodies on the ground. 10 Polish prisoners of war in striped uniforms jumped down from the truck and started to drag the bodies to the truck. They then picked up the corpses and tossed them onto the truck tray. 2 of the prisoners climbed back onto the tray and dragged and stacked the bodies. The men were covered in blood from the dead gypsies. When the job was finished, a soldier walked to each of the caravans. He had a backpack with a hose leading to a gun-like device. As he walked to the first caravan, he fired a stream of flames into the van from the flamethrower. This was done to all of the vans. Each one was well alight. 2 people who were hiding in the vans ran out with their clothes well on fire. One of them was Giorgio. The Hitler Youth boys ran to these 2 people as they lay on the ground writhing in pain from the burns of the fire which had been squirted into the van. The boys stabbed each one many times. A few minutes after the carnage was finished and the Nazis were congratulating each other, some prisoners went to the dead horses. 2 went to the dead goat. The dead goat's belly was slit, it was then gutted. The goat's carcass was towed across the ground to the dead horses. It was then tossed with the large pieces of meat which were cut from the horses. This was then tossed onto the truck with the dead gypsies. This was going to be used to feed the prisoners who had been working throwing the bodies onto the trucks. The truck drove off through the forest, crashing through shrubs and small trees until it finally stopped in another glade in the forest. Bernardo extricated himself from the bush he had been hiding. He then followed the crashing truck as it mowed down the small trees and shrubs. He was careful to keep far enough from the scene not to be seen. The truck came to a halt some 300 meters away. Vehicles were parked here, 2 small amphibious rear-engine vehicles and another large truck with a covered tray. Bernardo again hid in some brush as the men stopped fleetingly near the other vehicle. When they started to move again, he extricated himself from the bush he had been hiding. He once again followed the crashing truck as it mowed down some more small trees and shrubs until it came to a larger clearing in the forest. The Nazi commander screamed some orders. The Polish prisoners jumped down from the truck and undid a box running along with the chassis of the truck. spades, picks, and shovels were tossed out on the ground. The emaciated Polish prisoners selected tools. The Nazi commander paced out an area to dig and had one of the prisoners follow him to mark the corners of the soon-to-be grave with a pick. He dug a shallow hole on each corner of the rectangle which had been stepped out. The men started to dig in the moist soil, digging the hole some 5 meters long by 3 meters wide. The soil and clay were tossed out on three sides of the hole. The men sweated profusely as they worked. A young soldier watched them, would menacingly point his gun and then occasionally yelled at one of the men to work harder. The bodies and meat on the truck were covered in green flies. The people's bodies started to swell. Bernardo could not bear to watch. He was transfixed by the horrible scene but was afraid to move. In his mind, he was formulating horrible curses on all of the SS soldiers. After an hour and a half, the commander returned with some of the men to check the depth of the hole. It was nearly 2 meters deep. He yelled in his nasal voice for all of the men to get out of the hole. It was deep enough. The men were helped over the rim of the hole by others pushing them up the slippery bank. The men out of the hole handed the handle of a long-handled shovel to the men to hold as they left the grave. One man was left in the hole without another to help him up. "Hey Yarko, what say we leave you there? You can stay with the dead gypsies and keep them company in the hole." The man in the grave yelled back some abuse. The men laughed as two of them reached down and grabbed an arm each and towed Yarko over the side of the grave. The prisoners were extremely thin and grubby. The Polish prisoners then tossed the bodies from the truck into the hole. Bernardo watched as the members of his family were thrown so the bodies were in line, with their heads up to the other side of the hole. The truck was started and moved farther along the edge of the hole. Bernardo had tears streaming down his face. He could hear the moan of one person who had not yet died. The truck was driven away when all of the bodies were thrown from the truck. The prisoners then set about refilling the large hole. His dead parents and relatives then had the dirt thrown over them as the prisoners toiled with large shovels. Bernardo shuddered as his mother's face was covered with a shovel filled with dirt. He felt numb with the horror of watching his whole world collapse in front of him as all of his family was destroyed by the evil man. The SS officer was laughing with the troops and boasting. "Hey, Wolfgang. These were the easiest we have had to kill. I wish some of the others had been this simple." Only one person fired a shot. Wolfgang smiled and nodded. "How easy has it been to kill this mob, hey?" he said to Wolfgang, his second in command. The soldiers and Polish prisoners climbed into the trucks and finally drove off. After they had left the scene, Bernardo walked to the mound atop of the mass grave and collapsed to the ground and sobbed. Being a gypsy, sobbing was not normally a thing done. In his clan, it was a sign of weakness. Bernardo found it difficult to move from the mound of dirt which had engulfed his family. Feeling an extreme sense of guilt and sorrow, he then walked back to the burned-out caravans. Smoke was still rising from the ashes of the vans. He found nothing worth salvaging as all clothes and timber had been burnt. The springs and axles with the rings, which had been the tires on the wooden wheels, and the clasps and chains from the bridles and other saddler were all that was left of the wagons. A few pots and pans and crockery lay in the ashes. He found the blood-smeared patches on the grass where each member of his family had been systematically murdered. He sat near where his mother was killed, and the tears streamed down his face and mixed with her blood on the grass. The stench of death filled his nostrils. It was like having sniffed chili powder. It burned to his brain. Bernardo suddenly realized how hungry he was. He had barely eaten for the last 3 days they had been traveling. He ran back to where the dead chicken from the morning lay and brought it back to the clearing. He pulled the dry feathers hard and found it tough to remove them from the now cold dead bird. He then searched through the ashes and found the blades of some burnt knives. He then remembered that his father always kept a sharp knife in a scabbard on the halter on one of the horses. This was to be able to cut the rope in case they had to flee in a hurry. He walked to the dead horses still tethered to the trees and found the knife. The horses were starting to swell up. Green blowflies had found the cut-off sections and were accumulating in large numbers. The smell of terror still emanated from the horse corpses. These horses had been part of the family as well as the dogs. There were some coals among the ashes, where one of the caravans had been burnt, he found warped steel-handled pan. He then cut the chicken into pieces ready for cooking, he placed this on the coals and then started to cook the pieces of the stolen chicken. As he watched the chicken pieces sizzle in the frying pan, he turned them over with the large knife he had found. His thoughts went back to his murdered family and friends. As he studied the scene of carnage, he hoped in his mind that this had been a terrible dream and he would waken to find his family cooking and tending the animals. He had never been left alone before in his life. He did not like the feeling. The thought then hit him. He was the last member of the Romanski clan. As he ate the hot chicken pieces, he thought hard, his thoughts went to the present situation. The memory of how weak and ill Giorgio had been from hiding in the forest for 3 weeks, and the tales of wild animals foraging around looking for prey, was on his mind. After pondering further, as to where he should go, he deducted that if he were to follow the small stream as it meandered down through the countryside, there surely should be a village or some farmhouses along its course. Before setting off, he meticulously checked the burnt wagons again to see if he could find some coins or any other valuables he could sell to buy food. He knew where the strongbox was situated in his father's van, where any money would have been kept. He dug around and found the hinges and lock of the box. There were a few coins, these were misshaped by the heat of the fire, any paper money was burnt to ash. The jewelry had melted and any precious stones had disintegrated in the heat. The wooden caravans had burned with very high heat. A feeling of dread overcame him as he thought of his family working to set up camp just 3 hours ago. He had to move away from this dismal bad place.